You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I want to thank the State of the Mobile Net and the Internet Caucus Foundation for inviting me here and inviting our wonderful panel. I think this is going to be a really interesting panel, and I want to just encourage everybody in the audience to feel very comfortable jumping in and raising any of the issues that come to mind as we talk about mobile infrastructure and the state of the industry and the state of investment in this sector. My name is Jessica Zuffolo. I'm the policy director for Medley Global Advisors. We're an independent policy macro intelligence firm based in New York, and we do not invest in the sector. We have no investments. We just provide independent policy research to the street. So in my role as an analyst, I wanted to, welcome a really fantastic panel that we have here. We have Carolyn Brandon from CTIA, who I know many of you know. She's extremely active in the sector. We have Tom Wolfe from Alcatel-Lucent, which will be great to talk and listen to Tom talk about what Alcatel-Lucent's doing, both in the domestic market and globally, as it relates to their LTE build out and their integrated solutions across the world. Jerry Salemi from Clearwire is here with us. Very fortunate to have somebody that really can talk about the WiMAX, the mobile WiMAX, the emergence of mobile WiMAX in the U.S. and sort of what their plans are throughout 09. And then Tom DeReggi, right here to my immediate left, is with WISPA and the Rapid DSL, which is a wireless ISP that's based in Maryland, my understanding, and provides fixed mobile broadband solutions to the region. So I thought we would start with you, Tom, and just what I'd like to do is we're not going to do any presentations here because, the way I feel that it's very important to make sure that anybody that's invited to speak on a panel doesn't spend a lot of time preparing for it because we all have busy jobs and nobody has time to put together an elaborate presentation. But this is a very, very, I think, knowledgeable, established group of people that really know the sector extremely well. And I wanted for us to have a very informal discussion. And we're going to go down the table and take about 5 minutes to just talk about from each panelist perspective, what they're doing, what their business model is, what they're doing, what kinds of investment trends or any opportunities that are coming, through their deployment in the U.S. and globally in 2009, whether recessionary pressures are affecting their business plan, what kind of difficulties are they facing as it relates to difficult anybody in the equities space is having difficulty accessing capital. So, how does that impact their their product launch in the United States? So I wanted to start with Tom, and then we can go down, and then from there, what we'll do is based on the discussion from our panel, I will probably start with a couple of questions because I will have a lot, I'm sure. And then I'll just make sure that everybody here in the audience has a chance to ask our panel a couple of questions of their own as the discussion unfolds. So we'll just informally start with Tom, and you can talk a little bit about WISPA and Rapid DSL, and you can do it from here or you can come up to the podium, whatever you like.
Either way.
Okay, I'll just stand here and...
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm Tom DeReggi with Rapid DSL. We're ISP out of the Maryland area. We've been doing fixed wireless since year 2000 or 2001. I also am the vice president and legislative committee chairman of a group called WISPA, which is a group of about 300 wireless ISPs across the country doing similar things that we do now. Serving both rural, underserved, and urban areas. Probably one of the first questions I would ask myself is, as a fixed wireless provider, why am I here today in a mobile broadband summit? And I would say that because mobile comes in many different flavors. And the players that are involved in fixed wireless are now considering looking at the markets relating to mobility and how it applies to their business models. If I just pick a particular technology and say just talk about WiMAX for a second, that would be a good example where there's two standards, a 802.16d and an 802.16e, standard E being the mobility and D being the fixed. Both technologies have a lot of advantages. The fixed is a more robust technology if you don't have the mobility play. Things like higher power, more efficiency, low latency, things like that. But the flip side, the trade-off with mobility is you have that aspect to add to it with the 802.16e platform. So a lot of providers are asking themselves, do they want to start building their networks in a mobile platform so they can compete in this new market and have one infrastructure deployed that does everything they do? Or do they stay with their existing technology and do something that they may be able to do better than the mobile players because their technology gives them an advantage to do it better because of the nature of the protocols that are used? With the fixed market, we have several ways of doing mobility. One is that our service is terminated with a Wi-Fi device that does a very short-range mobility solution. And the fixed wireless portion is getting the connectivity. An example of that would be a park where you might have a Wi-Fi hotspot, but because it's a remote area, the best way to get broadband there may be through a wireless solution. The other thing that comes up a lot is either temporary or services that might need to be moved. I could give an example of a festival that's happening and you need to get coverage to that location, a ship that's docked somewhere and may stay there for 30 days, a construction trailer that might be building a building for a year, things of that nature. Which is actually a pretty big market that a lot of people don't realize, and I think that's one of the strengths of the wireless internet provider business is that they can very quickly build local networks and build out services at very fast speeds to areas, even if it's just a couple of days. I can give you an example of why that might be possible. Would be an example of our network, for example, is built on tall rooftops. We can go out and modify our network in a couple of hours by taking the elevator up, whereas if we were a cell phone provider, it would be several thousands of dollars and a couple of days of planning to actually do the implementation of the changes on that network. So they're really two different two different dynamics. We can also compare ourselves to if we look at us to a model of more of a cell phone provider where nobody can deny the benefit and the scale of the type of business where you walk down to Circuit City, you can buy a device there and know that you can walk out the front door and go anywhere, and it's probably going to work pretty well. And that's a large market. But there's another market where that product just isn't going to serve that person who buys it the way that they want to be served. They want a product that they use that works just as well as that service that they had at home, just like their fiber or just like their DSL line. And I think that's where the small providers come in, is that when they bring in portable services or service to remote areas, they're bringing it in, they're engineering that solution, they're doing it in a very short period, and giving a level of reliability that's specific to that customer's need for that application. And I think that's the aspect that we really are bringing to the market today. It's not really mobility, but I should say portability or temporary broadband services. I guess that's pretty much mostly what I want to say. I'll save most comments for the discussion. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Jerry?
Thanks, Jessica. And, it was pretty intimidating to have Jessica introduce you and start by saying that she represents macro intelligence. So I guess I must be the micro guy. I just want to be able to use the word intelligence in my bio, even if it is micro, because I'm actually, wow, that was great. Clearwire is a company that is building out a WiMAX network nationally. It was started just about 5 years ago today with a simple proposition that The current wireless providers have done a great job in bringing voice service, and as they move forward to their 2.5G and then 3G networks, continue to deliver a very good product at a good price, and obviously that is something that the American consumer and worldwide we're seeing is being absorbed and consumed at great levels, and growth continues to exist among these wireless providers, and the service they're providing is good, and that is great. And Tom and the others providers with fixed and other services continue to fill niches in a mobility market. And we think that's great, but we also think that there's an opportunity because that mobility market is growing so rapidly. And there's a Cisco study that just came out, and it said that more than half of mobile data usage would double every year in the next several years, and it will grow 66 times between 2008 and 2013. And over half of all of the Internet use will be driven to services that are mobile devices. And that is really a reality that's taking place. And with that, you need networks that are able to be rich and continue to be able to take all of those great new applications that are being driven by the manufacturers and Alcatel and Apple and others, so that when you have your device, you're taking your device with you, the rich, powerful applications that those new devices are allowing consumers to enjoy are able to likewise have rich, growing networks that are able to provide the bandwidth and the speeds so that those applications give you that same feel, that same richness that you have when you're using that device connected to a wired network. So Clearwire was formed looking at WiMAX technology, which is a 4G technology. It's OFDM technology that basically we believe provides a cost basis that allows the service to be low cost to the end user. It allows for speeds that we are now delivering of 4 to 6 megabits per second on a downlink. And that can grow. There are other 4G technologies, LTE and others. Alcatel-Lucent has recently won a contract with Verizon. Those are all great, and we will just be in the marketplace, I think, all meeting the demand of consumers as it continues to grow and as we move forward in what I really see is a transformational period when people's demand, and if you look at some of the stats which I brought, which no one cares about, but they'd be fun to look at later. My children look and gather news differently than we gather news. And I'm old at 55 here, and I still relied on Walter Cronkite probably. But most young people are actually, when surveyed, say that they get their news on the internet. That they spend more time on Facebook, and Facebook actually had 50 million subscribers in 2 years. That is compared to AM radio, which took 38 years to get to 50 million subscribers, and even the Apple iPod took 3 years. So it is pretty remarkable that social networking and the way that they're connecting, and it's also where they're using the email is on Facebook. They're not using it on. They're not using their Yahoo mail as older people are, and that's all about the fact that these people are used to devices. They're used to the richness of the devices. They didn't go through the period when cell phones dropping calls were just an acceptable part of saying, "Wow, I have a cell phone. I don't mind that it drops call occasionally because I actually can take a phone with me. It's not connected to a wire." They're accustomed to having something that's with them, that's rich, that allows them to go to YouTube to get their video. And by the way, I actually now even have Facebook on my AT&T cell phone, and I'm able to click on to a 3G service and see if my children had sent me an email on Facebook. And that's what people need. And to do that, you need networks that are going to be rich enough to do that. So Clearwire provides us WiMAX service using the spectrum in the 2.5 spectrum band, if that means anything. We've rolled out 47 markets in the United States using a pre-WiMAX technology. We launched two WiMAX technology markets in Portland, Oregon, and Baltimore, And we have 80 other markets that are being built right now that are scheduled for deployment within the next 2 years by 2010 that will cover up to 120 million pops in the United States. Those networks are rolling out on a schedule, and they include many of the cities we announced, include Vegas, Atlanta, that are scheduled for the summer of this year. San Francisco has a special time that's coming out this year. And one of the things that we're trying to do is say that part of this is that it has to be open. And a WiMAC technology is an open standard that uses an embedded type of devices. So there will be 100 devices that will have embedded WiMAX chips in them to be similar to the way Wi-Fi works that will be available by the end of this year. Laptop computers and others, they're on the market now, that just allow you to have even a casual relationship with your customer. You're able to sign on a daily basis, a weekly basis. So you're moving away from that kind of contractual one technology that doesn't allow you to move to another carrier or to have the flexibility to really devise the way you want to view your services that you're trying to get in a relationship that best serves your own lifestyle and your own needs. And, you know, I guess lastly, not only does it need to be open, but you really have to have something that is going to have the applications that can continue to be driven in the marketplace available on a WiMAX standard. And one of the things we did and is kind of follow the Apple example here, and we have put together an innovation network that connects Cisco, Intel, and Google. And I should mention that Intel and Google are part of our strategic investors and partners that we have also with some cable companies, Comcast, Time Warner, and Brighthouse, among others. And in this innovation network in Silicon Valley basically allows application devices to connect to this network free and to continue to experiment to see how they can best drive more services available that will work off that network. So it's not just a matter of saying, are we going to push out technology, services, applications to the customer, or are we going to be basically the recipient, the receptacle of those applications as the smarter people out there in Silicon Valley and elsewhere throughout the country and world are able to devise those services and applications and bring them to our network. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, and thank you.
Thank you. Doug?
Okay, thanks. A little bit on background. Doug Wolf with Alcatel-Lucent. I've been in the mobile infrastructure side for the last almost 10, 15 years. Did AMPS, TDMA, CDMA. So all these terms that you may not be 100% familiar with are kind of the 2G initial mobile infrastructure and evolving to, you know, we use the term 3G a lot, but that's what 3G is what you see in the networks today. You can get service from Verizon, AT&T, et cetera. That provide, you know, good voice service, but they provide this data service now. And we've talked a lot here about the applications and the drive and demand for the mobile net. But as my counterparts here have discussed, you know, there's a next generation of technologies that are ready to be unleashed, and the demand is there in the marketplace. It's clear that the applications you can get on the internet, you want to take them mobile. So I think the demand curve has been happening. We had a discussion, or a couple points were raised around, you know, this initial hockey stick of data happening on the mobile networks. The first hockey stick has occurred. Wireless service providers are seeing ARPUs from data at approximately 20% and growing, growing tremendously. And this second hockey stick, where the demand is really going to outstrip and stress the business models a little bit on the demand for the applications, the social networking, you know, versus the business model of what's coming in. So underlying to all that is a requirement for very cost-effective architectures, very cost-effective technologies that can deliver this, as well as all the openness from the type of content and the open service delivery that you can get. So I'm going to talk a little bit around the technology at a high level. Because as Jerry mentioned, this kind of 4G technology, this term 4G, what is it? And I think there's a definition in the standards that's very, very technical. I'll try to translate this a little bit different. Clearwire, Sprint, and some other companies have deployed one flavor of a new technology, WiMAX, that has OFDM and MIMO. And that is simply just a more efficient air interface that allows you to get more users at a higher bandwidth into the available spectrum that's out there. Another flavor of that that's the same underlying technology, OFDM and MIMO, is there's a technology called LTE, another standard but the same underpinnings is developing, and that is a technology that I'll talk a little bit about that several operators are looking at. In fact, it looks like to be a fairly large global standard. So in the U.S., there's there's the existing frequency bands. There was the 850 megahertz and the PCS bands, the AWS bands that were auctioned off in the 2006 timeframe, 2005 timeframe, and most recently, in addition to the Clearwire spectrum at 2.5, but most recently there was a 700 megahertz auction of the FCC bands and. That has been awarded, and a couple of the lead adopters there in the 700 megahertz bands are using this LTE technology as their chosen path forward. So I think Verizon Wireless has publicly announced that. AT&T has suggested that they're looking in that direction. There's fairly strong global uptake around this OFDM MIMO technology, both WiMAX and or LTE around the globe. What does this mean? So it's a more spectral air interface, but it also means transforming the network behind it because, one of the initial presenters showed the cellular architecture, and the OFDM MIMO makes that air interface more efficient, but you also have to take all those bits back, the backhaul, and that was raised earlier. The backhaul has to become more cost-effective and efficient. So I know my counterparts here are dealing with those issues every day on backhaul. And I think that's something where the network is transforming from old circuit switch, time division multiplex to IP, carrier Ethernet. These type of technologies allow you to very cost effectively move this massive amount of megabits of data around the network from the cell site back to the data serving nodes and then back into interfaces into the internet. What you're seeing from the infrastructure provider side, we're coming out with new technologies to support the operator business models on new radio base stations that have OFDM MIMO in them. They're becoming more cost-effective. They're highly scalable. They can serve many more users attached to the network and provide higher bandwidth and downlink performance. But also, there's a tremendous investment back into this backhaul network. And that is IP, MPLS, service routers that are providing not only the compression of that backhaul, but also providing a high level of quality of service. Because at the end, what the end consumer, what the operator is looking for is to be able to provide high quality of service. And now you've got some very new elements that are coming into the network, and these all have to work together in a very efficient manner. The type of applications we're talking about, like gaming applications, the user on the internet, on the wired internet or DSL internet or cable internet, is used to very low latency. So they want to be able to, get on the system. They want to have quick responses. And, the networks of today are challenged to provide that type of performance. But I think these OFDM MIMO type technologies, along with a very efficient backhaul, are allowing you to provide quality of service and an end-user experience that doesn't matter that you're on the mobile net. You're getting that great type of experience. So gaming is, a couple people have talked about that here today also. So we see this as a total, from an Alcatel-Lucent perspective, and I think really the industry in general sees this as a very transformational. There's business models that are changing. There's certainly equipment that we're providing to offer up to meet those objectives. And then there's the whole service delivery architecture. And there's been a lot of discussion of all of the
existing what we would call over-the-top players, or the Googles, the internet service providers that have different types of applications that have caught on. Those are all being translated and being worked into a mobile format, and that their service delivery platforms are being developed. Alcatel-Lucent provides some of these service delivery platforms for operators to be able to, change their business model from being a walled garden to exposing certain elements, because they really have to work on a business model that works in partnership with some of the Web 2.0 and service providers rather than being just a single walled garden. So there's a total end-to-end perspective on this, of not just the base station, but the backhaul, the type of quality of service you need across the network to manage it, and then service delivery platforms that allow you to mix these great applications that are coming from the internet along with the special capabilities and offerings that service providers can provide. And I think a great example of that today was some of the location-based or presence information that is unique to the mobile area, to the mobile side, that where you're at, and if you can adapt the applications and the network-aware information to be able to deliver those type of applications to you in the form that you want it, and I think it's really moving the mobile net forward. So I'm going to pause there and turn it back to you.
So Carolyn, why don't you just comment a little bit about what you've heard on this panel and provide some analysis to us on where you think the mobile infrastructure sector is headed.
Okay. I am such a new addition to this panel, I'm actually not on the panel. So for purposes of press, I wasn't here. Before I get into the substance, Jessica, I just want to say it is a personal achievement that I'm actually on a panel with Mr. Salemi. First time I met Jerry, I had braces and was an intern. And the fact that we're now on a panel, I'm older, you seem to be younger, and it's a point of personal pride.
It only reflects back to the fact that I watched Walter Cronkite, and that tells you how old I am.
I was actually came to this event from one on the Hill, and our friends in the cable industry made a point that their real focus these days is to keep up with demand. And I thought that was an interesting perspective, because I think from the wireless world, what we try to do is stay ahead of demand. We are trying to anticipate what the customers are going to want, what their experience is likely to be, and to make the necessary infrastructure and R&D investment on devices and applications to, as I said, stay ahead of that. And I think, Jessica, actually, in terms of what is the trend, I think these guys have just, made a very important point, which is these guys are building and they're investing. And that is a critically important trend that is of, obviously particular relevance in light of what's going on with the economy. To highlight this even more, one of our members, T-Mobile, their majority owner back home, has put a cap on the CapEx for what they might be doing in their home markets. But in the United States, T-Mobile will continue to spend and has a sizable CapEx budget. So the reason I highlight that in particular is to emphasize that the trend in the mobile space is to continue to grow the networks, to stay ahead of some of the demand that's been outlined by the folks on this panel. I would say another trend, and this is by reading material that people like Jessica and others put out there, is the amazing activity that's happening in the converged device space. So we're all very comfortable with the fact that things like this called smartphones are becoming more of a mass market product because the price points are dropping. But what we're also starting to see is a proliferation of products that are slightly bigger than this but smaller than a PC. And a lot of folks are pointing to that occurrence as another factor that's going to seriously drive demand for more faster in the wireless space. And you can't do more faster, no matter how cool an application is or how cool the device capability is, unless the network is capable of supporting the devices and the applications. And I think what you've heard here is people are actually putting money into both the R&D and the actual build-out to go ahead and stay ahead of that. I think that's all I have to say at the moment.
Great. So what I wanted to start with is just a couple of general thoughts as I listened to this extremely august panel, just really great points made. U.S. consumer spending has clearly contracted. There's no question about it. And the recessionary pressures on, the purchasing power of the average consumer has been limited. So what I'd like this panel to maybe go into is from the mobile infrastructure side, the infrastructure industry, I think, globally is also contracting. There's no question. You know, earnings in the last couple of weeks has been reporting a little bit of sluggishness. And I'm trying to get a sense of how that's impacting, you know, really what's happening on the ground. How is this impacting your network construction, you know, plans? Huawei is a Chinese equipment company. They have reported a net income increase of about 20% in the United States. That's a tremendous amount of growth for a Chinese equipment company in the U.S. And so it seems to me that there is substantial amount of competition in the equipment space, in the infrastructure arena in this country, and globally. And so I'm trying to figure out how that impacts everybody's business here, and how you see that, you know, how you see that, how you see yourselves and your companies, you know, rising above that to try to meet demand as competition in this market is, you know, vigorous. And maybe we can start with Alcatel-Lucent, since you probably have, you know, very immediate comments on this.
Well, I could start off with less than 2 months ago, I was working at a different company in the mobile, in the infrastructure side, so now I'm at Alcatel-Lucent. So that kind of tells you that there's consolidation is happening just on the infrastructure side of the business. You made some comments about Huawei. No doubt they're growing, not U.S. GAAP, but they're definitely growing, and they're present everywhere. So the competition is extremely high. I think what's encouraging, though, is that I think there is going to be a shakeout in the industry for the mobile infrastructure players. That is definitely occurring real time. But what is interesting is the build out that's happening with Clearwire that's happening. I mentioned kind of the next gen network from Verizon Wireless. We're seeing in Japan, NTT Docomo is building out this next gen network also. T-Mobile in Europe, for example, has announced that they're one of the early adopters. And we see a tremendous opportunity, and it's going to be a tough fight to succeed in this time frame. But the encouraging part is there's build-out because there is this raw demand from the end user, et cetera. But it's a challenging environment right now.
I actually think that the we all know and we all suffer every day through the fact that the economy is probably in one of the worst macro situations that we have seen, and it's very difficult to get equity, and there are a lot of good companies that could be building right now except for the access to capital. So that is, I think, an issue that everyone faces. Clearwire, I think, was in somewhat of a unique position in that because of the business model and because of its ability to attract partners and to have the initial seed money, the first $300 million put in by one party, it kind of got off to a start. And despite the big, heavy winds going against the trade, we're able to raise $6 billion in the last 4 years and recently got the $3.2 billion capital injection from our strategic investors just 6 months ago. So that has put us in a position where we have capital and the partners have all agreed that this is a time to build, that the opportunity around mobile internet and the mobile service applications and to bring those greater speeds to people's hands and to support the device manufacturers who are bringing those devices and the application to the marketplace, it's the time to do it. So despite the economy, we're going forward and actually investing that $3 billion in building those networks out and those markets out as quickly as we can, and literally as quickly as you can. I mean, it just takes time. It takes a year to build most networks out. And one of the points I just wanted to make off what Doug said is that, you know, one of the things that Clearwire has that is an advantage is that we are totally greenfield. We don't have a legacy network. We don't have any, legacy cellular circuit switch devices that we have to connect to. So we're able to really go out, and the reason we took WiMAX is that it is a clean layer 2 IP network that you can just build on, and it allows us just to grow And he's right about LTE and WiMAX are very similar. I mean, it's something that you really have almost 85% of the same DNA and everything around it. The difference really is that we just don't have that legacy reach back that the current providers want to have. Now, I'm going to tell you the negative side of that is I also don't have 80 million customers as as Verizon may have. And I mean, if I had my cash flow and I looked at AT&T's earnings call yesterday, I'd probably take that over, you know, spending $3 billion. But, I just wanted to find something positive in it. You know?
Jessica, can I throw in a rather mundane topic, but it's, I think, unbelievably germane to infrastructure, and that's tower siting. It's, I think, kind of a dull issue, but it's incredibly important. And as we are now at the intersection of this exploding demand for wireless broadband, and you have companies like Clearwire that are trying to build out, you've got companies that, like Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and others who are trying to upgrade and grow their own networks. We are now faced with this unbelievably frustrating situation where states and localities all of a sudden are more often, rather than not, sitting on requests for approval to put facilities in localities so that folks on this panel can continue doing the infrastructure build-out that's necessary. And what's interesting is I think we're all familiar with all of the innovation. It can look like a little it can be put in a steeple. It can look like a tree. I mean, I think the tower industry, et cetera, has done a very good job of trying to make these things as unobtrusive as possible. And what we have been trying to do in conversations both at the state and federal level is to bring some attention to what might be an otherwise mundane topic, because without the infrastructure, you are not going to be able to realize the dreams and the kind of future that was described in today's keynote before the lunch. So I just want to bring people's attention to the fact that there is something very straightforward that needs to happen, and it has to do with the shot clock. And it's not that we need carte blanche for the states and localities to say, fine, do whatever you want. What we're asking for is certainty. If we file a request for approval, give us a yes or give us a no, but give it to us in some sort of a defined time period so we can make a decision about having to go find another location or not.
So is zoning a problem for you guys? Is zoning a problem for the WISP community, do you find?
Well, it really depends on where you are in the United States. In the Midwest, no, because it's a very straightforward process. You just go out and build your tower. But here in D.C., it's cost prohibitive. Small providers don't build towers. It costs more to get the permit process than to build a tower. It's a big problem. Like to see that solved, but it doesn't just stop with towers. It also that same problem exists with buildings and rooftops. Ground providers have a clear easement to anywhere they want to serve. There's not a clear easement in the rooftops and the skies, and until wireless providers have that clear easement, they'll never be able to deploy at the same speed and scale that the other carriers have. So I think there is a lot of work that needs to be done in that area.
I have lots more questions. Let's talk about LTE and WiMAX. And I just pulled off of the web a little bit earlier ago a press release from Alcatel-Lucent about their NG Connect program. And on the on your website, it says that the NG Connect program, founded by Alcatel-Lucent, has the goal of establishing a diverse ecosystem of infrastructure, devices, content, applications for both mobile and fixed broadband networks, including 4G, LTE, GPON, and other ultra-high bandwidth technologies. How come WiMAX is not part of that, or is it?
Well, WiMAX is included as part of the
4G,
the 4G part.
Okay.
Yeah, and just, you know, the small commentary, because that is in kind of my area. It's Next-Gen Connect, and you know, certainly you heard today, you know, Nokia creating their own SDK system, obviously Google, iPhone. There's all these systems developing up, which is absolutely fabulous. There's people that can bring applications directly to the device in an open fashion, which is different than, you know, the model of 4 years ago. And I think Alcatel-Lucent is just doing that to stimulate that we can get an end-to-end system, an LTE system, a WiMAX system to market earlier. Because one of the big issues we had in 3G is the ecosystem took a long time to develop, and it never fully met what I think the end user's expectations were. And this is just our part of trying to make that happen. We'll come with pre-tested applications, bring in media companies, innovative companies, to work with devices that probably fundamentally use IMS, SIP-based devices that will allow for open application development. That doesn't exclude anything that Google or Apple or any other companies bring to the market. It just adds on top of it and maybe allows them to leverage some of the location or presence information.
Yeah, and I guess we're really lucky that our arms dealer to the left and the other guys who are all out there building things really are recognizing that they can help drive demand, which is going to sell more products for them. You know, Samsung made an announcement yesterday that they provided a new phone for AT&T, and at the same time they came up with a smartphone for Clearwire and a new Mondi device. And I think that we're fortunate that despite the fact that the economy has really constricted as greatly as it has, that many of the manufacturers have focused on mobility. And I think as you see some of the wired networks kind of basically, losing their not growing, to say the least, or decreasing, that the manufacturers in telecommunication have recognized it and really moved to the mobility areas and to the next gen to help drive research.
I'd like to comment on that by going back a question or two that I didn't answer. The country is in a very tough economic time, but is the wireless industry or the broadband industry? And the answer is no in my mind. I feel it's a recession-proof industry, at least it has been for the wireless internet provider industry.
So you're seeing growth in your business?
Oh, we're seeing the best growth of all time.
So you have high net adds. You've seen some good traction.
The problem with wireless is if you run out of capital and you run out of funding, you may stop building towers, but you don't stop filling in your network. It's not that expensive to fill in your network. If you can't continue to build, the capacity just goes down and more users share it. So it's a pretty safe investment opportunity today because as long as there's not 100% coverage, and we're nowhere near 100% coverage, there's this tremendous demand that is just there until you get it. 99% coverage is not good enough. 90% coverage isn't good enough. And if we just think about how much opportunity is there if there's just 10% of America left, I mean, that would be enough to keep the industry busy for 10 years. In the independent wireless industry, we never really had funding to begin with. Everything was financed through cash flow. So the fact that there's no capital now doesn't really affect us. What we would like to see is we'd like to see that change. And I think it's starting to. I think the government sees it with the broadband stimulus bill. I think that's going to really help inject money. And it's a great time for private investors to also jump on the bandwagon and know that these business models are going to be more successful with that kind of jump-start and subsidy to match the investment that other private investors are bringing in. So it's a tremendous time to invest in the market. I think it was mentioned earlier about the actual devices themselves that are becoming to the power or getting to the stage of the power that they can do multiple things. And we can get a device like this, and not only does it have a cell phone carrier or WiMAX rated antenna, it also has a Wi-Fi antenna. The same device can be used for five or six different applications or even providers. And that's really exciting. And I think if I was an investor today and I had to look at where I could spend money that was actually safe, this is where I would look.
Those are very interesting, provocative comments, given where we are today in the equity markets. I wanted to just very briefly talk about the sort of the migration path for both LTE and WiMAX, because I think some of you, Jerry and Doug, talked about how there's a lot of similarities between the two air interfaces. There's a lot of common threads between both, certainly more so than 2G platforms. And I guess I'd like to learn a little bit more about the migration, Jerry, from WiMAX. I mean, what is the next generation? I mean, as we talk about, maybe in 5 years we'll be like, okay, we're ready to move on here from 4G folks. Where are you going? Are you going to be? Is it eventual for anybody in the WiMAX space to ultimately go to LTE? I mean, I think that's a question that a lot of people are trying to figure out. And certainly, Doug, I'm curious to know your thoughts about that too. You know, what is the next evolution of technology in this space between the two existing 4G interfaces?
I think that we're going to try to get 4G out of the marketplace first before we come up to the second the step of, you know, what's the next 5G. I agree that we're making rapid decisions, but we need to, you know, demonstrate that each technology really can load, can fill, can work, and get to the more tricky part. It's one thing to be testing a technology in a lab. It's another to actually have it fully loaded in a marketplace when people are downloading the YouTube and everything else as fast as they can, and you happen to be at March Madness when people have got to make sure that they're getting their favorite team all simultaneously broadcast to their device. So, I think that, you know, we're very satisfied with, you know, with WiMAX, what the WiMAX technology has done now in Portland, Oregon. We're able to test it every day in a fully, you know, operational standpoint. LTE is being tested now. The standard has now been adopted. It'll be great to see how it works. We don't see them as, we see the companies as being competitive. But the technologies really aren't that important. The important thing is, how do we reach the marketplace? How do we sell our services? And, you know, for Clearwire, we are a service provider. We're not a manufacturer. We're always agnostic about how we deliver the service. We're trying to provide the customer with a service. They don't care whether it's OFDM and whether it's LTE. No one knows that. All they know is that when they turn on their device, they're able to get the applications with the speeds that are going to allow them to do what they want in an environment that they want to work in. So we're just a service provider, and we're going to make sure that no matter where we have to go next, we'll be prepared to do that. And most of these manufacturers, I think, have given us that latitude because these technologies are so similar at their core, that you have a lot more flexibility in the future than you did in the old CDMA, TDMA time frame when you were at totally different platforms.
Well, let me just comment on that. The reason why it's important is because, you know, people want to make sure that there is, you know, a decent shelf life to these competitive alternatives or, you know, whatever the business offering is in the market today. So that's why people are interested to know, or, you know, questions come up about sort of where this technology, you know, could be headed and whether they can ultimately be harmonized together if that were to happen.
Just one more thing. I mean, we have a device, a little Wi-Fi device that is, you know, that we also sell, a Clear Wi-Fi, which is a little box. It's the size of, you know, the BlackBerry here. And it basically just connects to the WiMAX network automatically. I mean, it's not something you need a connection manager on. It connects to the network, and you have a little Wi-Fi area, and then every device that works off Wi-Fi, which is now, I think there are a billion devices that have a Wi-Fi chip in them. You can correct me if I'm wrong. It just works on the Clearwire network. So, it's right, totally interoperable. So I think you're going to see more of those type of things. I think what Alcatel-Lucent and others are doing is that they're going to try to eliminate all of the jargon and all of the kind of proprietary aspects of networks shutting each other down and closing each other out, because there are ways around that, and that's what we're learning more all the time. But yeah. God, you're the expert.
Yeah. Well, I agree with your comments. I think interconnectivity between seamless interconnectivity between WLAN, WiMAX, LTE, that has to be their day one, with GPS added across the board. So that's a very powerful device set. I know the requirements that we're getting from, you know, the operator community is that we're coming out with radio base stations and LTE or WiMAX that have a tremendous amount of capacity. So the shelf life of this just inherently is going to be quite long. I'll make two other quick comments is that, I think the architecture too, this very simple cellular architecture diagram, that applies to LTE or WiMAX, but you start shrinking cells. And you're going to see things called femtocells, which are just like your little WLAN points, but they'll
There'll be WLAN. There'll also be LTE. There'll be WiMAX versions of that to get the dense in building coverage. You know, my phone didn't work so well in the bottom right here. You know, maybe a couple of years from now, that will all be covered. That there'll be cost-effective ways of doing that. There's certainly research on something called, you know, there's advanced WiMAX research. There's advanced LTE research. But we are quickly approaching kind of, you know, Shannon's limit. There's only so much you can put in. There's advanced antenna techniques. OFDM allows you to do spatial processing. I don't want to get into all the details of that, but you can squeeze more out of it with some antenna techniques. But, you know, there's not that much left. You get into more creative architectures, I think, in how you deploy the systems.
The last thing we can get of question, but as Doug will be able to tell you better than I can, is that there's just physics that get involved here, and that you have elements of, you know, cell siting, you know, how high the tower is, how much power is coming off the tower, and then to get more capacity, you put cells closer together, you do the cell splitting, and you also bring more spectrum to bear. And there hasn't been a discussion of spectrum, but one of the things that also would help allow you to get more capacity through the same technology is by basically reusing spectrum by bringing more channels to bear.
Absolutely.
I wish we had a lot more time. Yes, sir. Please identify yourself.
So, Rob Topolsky, New America Foundation.
Oh, we know who you are.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine.
I have two questions. One is, how do we create an environment where providers, when faced with the choice of the more expensive thing, improving the network so that it handles greater capacity, versus the faster choice of using DPI or other applications that would limit or prohibit consumers' choices. You know, given shrinking budgets, especially in this economic environment, how do we get them, how do we encourage providers to make that investment, make the network continue to grow with user demand? And second one is, how do we encourage providers, especially in the mobile space, to light up areas that currently aren't served at all by wireline broadband, so where the wireless providers are the providers for these more remote areas?
Thanks. So basically how to get broadband in markets that are not served.
That are, yeah, for example, I'm a user in Portland, Oregon of Jerry's Clearwire network. And it's wonderful. It's everything. If anything, he's undersold it here as to how great it is. But right down the road in North Plains, the next town over, 25,000 people, mostly Intel employees, they have no wireline broadband choice, and Clearwire hasn't built out to that point yet. In fact, Clearwire kind of painted over the same area, the Portland metro area, that was already covered by two other providers. So how do we encourage mobile investment in those areas and make that a broadband choice for them?
Big questions. Jerry, you want to talk a little bit about the build-out in the Portland market?
Yeah, and, you know, if again, at some point we can actually, you know, do this and show charts and actually, you know, you can color a map and look at what we've covered. And, you know, our goal is to cover, you know, 200 million POPs, which is two-thirds of the population, in a three-year time frame. And if you take, I don't have the statistic right, and I hate, Carolyn's on my panel, so she's going to have it. I don't know whether Verizon has 33,000 cell sites now, or they built 33,000 cell sites yesterday. I can't quite remember. But, but you know, there's, you know, it does take time just to physically get the cell sites built. So what you do is you kind of build into the areas that are the, you know, the easiest ones to build on, where you already have towers that you can, that have been structured, and you're building on that, and then you just expand out as quickly as you can, as quickly as the capital. So our goal really would be to cover, especially anybody who's an Intel employee, because we know they're still getting paid, you know, to go out there and get that covered as quickly as we can. On the other hand, I actually think that the Obama administration has got to really be praised for the broadband stimulus package, and I think that underserved areas are really probably going to be the first element that they will provide money to, so that they can go out there and get it built.
Does anyone else here on the panel?
Yeah, you know, I think.
And also, are you interested in applying for stimulus money?
Everyone is.
Okay.
I'll never take anything away from what Clearwire's done as a company. I think it's real exciting to watch what they've done and the amount of penetration that they've made and bringing this industry, dream of what this broadband can do to bring to underserved and second-tier markets. However, the thing that I keep going back to is that they're not the only provider. And, it's amazing how many people complain that they don't have broadband in their town, but they've never opened the phone book and called anyone other than the cable company and their local telco. There's a lot of WISPs in that area. It doesn't take that much to build a network to serve 25,000 people. So, one way to get it to build is funds need to be raised. That's building confidence in the investment markets. That means getting your local governments involved too. Maybe they're willing to give grants, whatever. But the second stage of it is getting engaged. As many parties or personnel to work on that, that army of personnel to go build networks. And the big carriers is one segment. But the advantage of the independent ISP is that they are more in tune to do smaller or individual projects and carry those on. So I would probably recommend considering those options.
Great. You guys can exchange business cards.
Carolyn, any comments?
No. I'm good.
Okay.
And no, I'm not applying for stimulus.
Great. Doug?
Nothing to add.
You don't think do you think the equipment sector is going to be applying for some of that money?
Well, certainly we want to facilitate. So definitely inside our company, there's been a big discussion on public safety. And certainly we've been involved with various companies looking at RUS funding. So certainly we want to participate.
Great.
So to be clear, that was not a criticism of Clearwire for not lighting up North Plains at the same time as the rest of Portland. It was just an observation that this is what happens to millions of communities everywhere and not for any particular company. They were just my convenient example. But to the first question, how do we get providers, and maybe Alcatel-Lucent, you would be the best one to answer this, is how do we get providers when making the choice between making an actual capacity upgrade versus using DPI or some other solution to shut down choices? How do we get them to make the more open choice?
So,
I
think the only thing, from an equipment perspective, certainly we have packet data core products that have deep packet inspection capability, DPI. So I think I think what you're getting at, if I understand the heart of your question, just to try to reiterate, is that some choices could be made to you can look at the packets, they can be inspected. They also could be used in an aggregate way when you reach congestion times in a network that you may have these blocking issues. And the question there is, how is DPI applied during blocking times or potentially in other ways? Is that kind of the nature of your question?
Well, in a sense, when that's like a minority of the time in a brief contention issue, hardly no harm, no foul. But when it becomes a solution in lieu of doing upgrades, particularly when upgrade dollars are hard to come by, how do we get carriers to choose upgrades rather than to just apply the hammer more?
Can I interrupt and just ask you a question? Because I admit I didn't understand your question to begin with. Give us an example where you feel a carrier has decided not to do a physical upgrade and instead is using DPI to address capacity issues.
AT&T Wireless or AT&T Mobility recently came out with a new update to their terms of service that basically told consumers that they weren't going to be able to use video-on-demand services, for example, Slingbox or YouTube or such. And users revolted against this idea, and AT&T has since recanted. But to me, it's an indication that they're going to apply pressure on their users not to use these kinds of heavy bandwidth services on their mobile networks.
And that's in lieu of
upgrading their network to handle.
And so how do you match that with their announcements of, their multiple billion-dollar expansion investment in CapEx for 2010?
I imagine that the amount would have have been more. You know, Jerry gave the statistic, 66 times increase in bandwidth we can expect between now and 2013. You know, AT&T, are they going to raise to that level? Or are they going to raise to the 33 times level? You know, so, yeah, they're investing in their network, but are they investing enough to keep up with that kind of demand?
I don't know if I have any more. I mean, that's a business. Well, you know, the tools are there potentially. How they use them, how the operator decides to, you know, describe the type of service they're going to have, but those are all choices available. But, you know, there are tools available to detect peer-to-peer traffic, certain type of activity, and there's certainly the ability, has been used historically in wireline and wireless networks, that if you reach congestion, you know, how do you apply some fair mechanism to be able to, you know, not have everything fall over? So no, I'm not directly answering your question.
Yes, sir. We only have about a minute or so.
I'm Richard Bennett. I have a question that was kind of prompted by what Rob said, because I'm aware of the fact that in Japan, which has fiber optic to the home service up to 1 gigabit per second, the practice for ISPs is to impose bandwidth caps on users, despite the increase in capacity. And so it's the sort of false dichotomy between traffic engineering and traffic capacity and network capacity increases that bothers me. Are you aware of any wireless technology that has infinite bandwidth?
No.
Okay.
If I was, I'd be...
We'd be selling it.
I'd be somewhere else. Yeah.
Maybe just one, you know, a little bit of an answer from everybody.
It should be mentioned that there is wireless technology that can go up to 10 gigabits today. Doesn't mean that it's practical to deploy wide scale, but that progress is being made.
Okay. Final comments. Final thoughts about where we're headed in this market.
Just back to the fact that I think we really are in a transformational period in telecommunications, and I think you're going to see that these mobile networks and competition around it are going to continue to grow. And that one of the statistics that I should have added is that Morgan Stanley just released a study that said the last thing people are willing to give up during this recession was their broadband service. So that, to Tom's point earlier, this is still growing. Cell phone is the second thing. So together you can see that, you know, this mobile networking is really the place to be, and we have great hope, and we think it's going to be something that people really enjoy, consumer needs and demands.
Thank you. I think that's it.
Please join me in thanking this fantastic panel.
Thanks for your time.